Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to yet another Sunday night and yet another episode of Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. This is the AfterBuzz TV after show for season 2, the brand new episode titled Pablo and Jessica. We're going to break down the whole thing for you and cover a little bit of last week because we missed it due to a holiday weekend. Hang out with us guys and we'll see you in just a second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
He suggests the song, and he's not even dancing.
I don't need to dance. I'm dancing inside. Dancing
inside. Oh, don't be modest. You know you're a dancing machine, Simon.
Yeah, a machine that's horribly, horribly broken.
Your wit is dancing.
Bit of oil,
thank
that's
you.
It.
Yeah, I use humor as my shield and my dance.
That's good.
Thank you.
Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to the AfterBuzz TV after show for Fear the Walking Dead.
Yes.
Season 2, Episode 11, titled Pablo and Jessica. We're also going to be covering Season 2, Episode 10, which is called Do Not Disturb, because we missed the episode last week due to a holiday weekend. We're going to do a probably 15 or 20 minute run through of that
one.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Cover a bit of the next episode as well. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by my wonderful panel of co-hosts, starting on my left with Miss Ashley Jack.
What's up, guys? Happy Sunday. Welcome back. We missed you last week.
I was here. I was so lonely.
So lonely.
I wasn't in the studio. I just turned up. just turned up for 2 hours on my own.
Ash, where can folks find you?
On Instagram, Twitter, Ashley_Chapman. Thanks for joining us, guys. And I am in the chat, so feel free to send me your questions, feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Mr. Simon Thompson.
Who the hell am I?
Take it away.
I was drinking water and I was pointing with my pen.
I thought that was kind of like, let's just ignore the bald guy.
There was a beat.
Let's just ignore him. Hello. My name, that was very camp. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me on Twitter at ShowbizSimon, Instagram at ShowbizSimon, and on Facebook. This is Simon Thompson.
You know.
Excellent, guys.
Hello there. Thank you for joining us. It's very nice of you. Thanks for your time.
And of course, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Also, AfterBuzz TV, we are on Twitter and iTunes. If you guys can leave us a rating or a review, it helps us stay high in the standings and continue to provide free content, which is what we like to do. We're not going to charge anything, and to do that, we need you guys' help to leave us
a
rating or a review. So,
yes, do it.
Pretty please with a cherry on top.
You know, I haven't done an English or a British accent around you in a while because
I feel you found it
offensive.
Mildly. but also,
severely.
Your accents, your English accents are quite shit.
Right, well, I'll tell you.
So, I mean, it's fine. I mean, you say you've done them.
Yeah.
You've had a go at them. But it's like saying, I've watched House, so I'm a doctor. No.
I did. I had an audition for a commercial audition where I was playing an English motorcycle cop this
week. How badly did that go?
No, listen, I went in.
Hello, mate, I'm a bloody motorcycle cop.
That's Simon imitating Ben imitating Simon. I went into the audition fully in character. I did the accent in the waiting room when I introduced myself, the whole deal, all the way through the end of it. And when I walked out, my scene partner, I like broke character and was like, hey, nice working with you. And he was like blown away. And he was like, wow, I really thought that you were British. And I was like, wow, Simon would be proud.
And has he either, one, never heard a British accent, or two, is he deaf?
Well, Simon, we'll see if I get the call back this week. And if I get the call back,
then I will be eating my hat. Yes. Or as we say in the UK, a hat.
Yeah, I'm not even going to attempt it. Guys, let's get into the episode from last week.
Yeah.
Episode 10, once again, titled Do Not Disturb.
Yeah.
So a whole bunch of cool stuff happened, and it ended with a very shocking... I sort of feel like we should start with the ending because we're a week behind and there was one really very, very relevant thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been jumping back and forth this season. We've kind of been, ever since we split up at the mid-season finale, we've been jumping back and forth between the Chris and Travis story, the Nick story, and then the story at the hotel. And they don't seem to like to do an episode where they just go between the three. They usually cover two of them at once.
Yeah.
We leave one out, so one character or a group of characters is missing. We got to pick up with Travis and Chris, and they met three frat boys. They weren't necessarily frat boys.
Bro-vivers.
There you go. They're American bro-vivers. A couple of their names, Brandon and James.
Can I just say, if that's going to be a reality show, we deserve a cut each.
Bro-vivers?
Yeah, bro-vivers.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It is good.
And Chris has taken a liking to them, so he's learning to drive. Travis is teaching him how to drive. And now Chris has decided his killing ways. He wants to be kind of part of the group, wants to hang with these guys. And it culminates, of course, with them finding a farm And this angry farmer shoots one of these brovivers in the leg, and Chris just caps him in front of Travis, just kills an innocent dude who was just protecting his land, and that's how that episode ends. We have not, after tonight's episode, seen anything. So what were your guys' reactions to that? That was a crazy moment, right?
I saw it coming, and I personally feel like we've been seeing it coming with Chris, especially from the first half of this season, and just how he's really sort of let go of really any sense of morality, and this world has now changed. So I think his sense of right and wrong, it's there's no difference between it. It's like you just do what you have to do. And I mean, of course, I was expecting there to be like a huge arc with Chris's character as far as him just kind of really going over the line. And this was a great moment to sort of showcase that. And for me, it just kind of showed Travis like, okay, I'm in really deep doo-doo. And I think maybe even pushes him to a point where he's like, I don't know if I can help it and how much longer I can handle this situation. I might need to bounce.
Simon is smirking. He's got the biggest smirk on his face.
I just told myself a joke. It was very funny. I was just thinking, there must be easier ways to make friends.
Yeah.
Than going like, hey, what are you going to do? Because, you're meeting new people for the first time. You want to impress them. You know, you start talking about a common subject. Like, hey, do you like Top Gun? Yeah, I love Top Gun. Next guy goes, I love Top Gun too. What about you? I love Top Gun. What about you? I killed a man once.
Right.
You know, you could just do an icebreaker without killing somebody in a barn. Even the other guys were like, we thought you were cool. You're clearly a fucking lunatic.
Right. I don't think I've ever done an icebreaker without killing somebody, so that's questionable.
I can tell you, it turns out it doesn't work well. Okay.
It's like when you're in the circle and it's like, two truths and a lie, two truths and a lie, and then the guy's just like, I had sex with my cousin. And you're like, there's supposed to be three things. What are you talking about? This is so uncomfortable.
I think he's going to kill Travis. I think he's just going to go. He's so unhinged.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that he is. He has no moral compass now.
Yeah.
He is. He's kind of like someone who is on a spectrum where they don't know what is appropriate and what isn't. But his compass is so off. He's like, well, I'll just shoot a guy.
Yeah.
And he shot walkers before. He's killed walkers.
Yeah.
But he killed a guy with a gun. Even the bad guys who were up for killing people were like, maybe we shouldn't kill this guy in a barn. Yeah. And he was like, no, you should totally kill the guy in the barn. I'll do it.
Well, you remember he killed the guy in the airplane hangar?
The guy was injured.
But that was kind of like a secret. That was behind closed doors, like, you know, wearing women's clothes or something.
Right.
Suddenly he's going out in full garb. It's like, his dad's like, what the hell happened to you?
Right.
Went walkabout, now you're completely unhinged.
Yeah, it's like daddy daycare on steroids.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think Travis knows that he can't be around this.
He can't explain it away. It's not acceptable.
He
can't be the big papa anymore and handle it. And I think that with him being, Chris being unhinged, and then just for the simple fact that he's still harboring a lot of resentment for the fact that Travis had to kill his mom, kill Liza, and they're not being trusted there, and him feeling like he's alone. I can see that being, you know, Chris having to kill, or Chris killing Travis. I can see that being a potential plot line. But either way, I think he's just going down a really, really downward spiral, and we'll see how it all comes together.
Well, I think also Travis realizes now that if they do meet up with the others again, there's no way in hell he's going to be able to reintegrate, because he's gone too far the other way.
Right.
You know, he's not heading towards, okay, I'm going to toe the line. It's like, I'm going to burn the line with everybody attached to it.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely, it's like a weird take on Fatal Attraction at this point, because I think he's starting to realize that with his son, it's like, he can't separate, and his son's a psychopath.
I thought you meant he was going to have sex with Glenn Close.
Hide the rabbits, buddy.
But, I mean, I really do think that with these shows, with this one and with Walking Dead, because it's a broken society that this show picks up in, there is killing of these zombies, and there tends to be a lot of killing and people dying and all that. You are sort of informed. Your moral compass is informed by your main protagonists for the most part. Like people do what they have to do to survive. But it's a strange take on a show. Like in the old days, TV shows didn't have characters that were just like obviously psychopaths who start out as a good guy. It just wasn't as common. You know,
they came and they were a psychopath. It was like, hey, there's the creepy guy.
Right. Yeah. Whereas like with this character, he's he started out as like angsty teenage son.
Yeah.
Now he really kind of feels like he's just turning into a villain. Yeah. And we also talked about, I think, last season and a little at the beginning of this season, Madison and Travis and how their point of views, their approaches were very different. You know, Travis was kind of a pacifist. He didn't want to kill the walkers. Mm. He didn't want to have to make those hard decisions. Madison seemed to be much more willing to do it. We talked about the whole time, does that mean that Madison's going to become a villain? Or does that mean that Travis is just going to die because he's too weak?
Yeah.
And it does feel like more and more they're moving us towards Chris is almost more in the right. Travis, I think, is just going to die. I think Travis is just not going to make it in this world.
Yeah.
I don't think Chris is morally in touch, but he seems to understand survival in a way that Travis just doesn't.
Yeah.
And so I do think that that's... I mean, they have that conversation where he looks at him and he's like, well, what's the end game, Dad? Then what? Then what? You know, so we can go back to Madison? We're never going back, kind of a thing. And I guess that it does seem to be kind of where this is ending up, is they can never go back.
And I think that Travis might still be harboring some sense of denial. Like, he still feels like there's going to be a way for them to get out of this and that the world in some way is going to possibly go back to normal. And so he's dealing with the fact that he has to sort of let go of that normalcy.
Yeah.
And then with Chris, you know, because didn't he also kill – this wasn't the first time that he actually killed someone kind of in cold blood. This was more of the first time that we've seen him directly kill somebody in cold blood. But didn't he also kill forgetting the character's name, but it was the guy who like helped them take over the boat, and he shot him. They were trying to lure, like a.
Oh, did he shoot that guy? The chubbier guy played by
Chubby Chubbenstein.
No, he's played by the musician by that. Remember the guy who comes on the boat at the beginning, and he's kind of leading the charge, and he gets shot.
Yeah.
No, he gets shot by Luis, I think, with the rifle.
He was still
from
alive.
The boat.
But he was still alive. Remember Chris.
Oh, he kills him. No, he doesn't accidentally kill him. He says he was going to turn, and he kills him, right? When he's locked up.
That's right.
So we already, from there, had started to see that progression.
Jesse McCartney.
McCartney, that's the one. Yeah. So we had already started to see that progression happening. So I think that, like you guys are saying, I mean, I think that with Travis, it's just the fact that he's definitely more, he's on the weaker side, but just not him being able to, like, make those types of decisions. And then, I mean, he's injured as it is right now, and having a character like Chris with you where he seems to be more of a threat and more of a danger to your survival than anything else. Like, at this point, he needs someone who's more stable to, like, really help them, and they're not really – they don't seem to be in the same space as far as, like, we're helping each other, we're in this together. It seems like Chris is kind of moving off and trying to do his own thing. Very similar to Nick, but, like, very two separate ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, like, you have a spectrum of people in the show. The people that totally get it. They get what's happening. They understand how to cope with it. And there's the people that survive. And then there's the people – even like the mom, who we're going to talk about in just a second, who is the mother who survived the attack in the hotel.
Yeah.
She's someone who resents this woman, Elena. She's crying at the loss of her daughter, and she's you know, essentially pouting, walking around like the stakes aren't real. And you're just like, characters like you die in this show. You don't get it. You don't get it that, like, you have a hotel that's filled with the dead. And if you don't work to get rid of the dead, you're going to die. That's just how it works.
Mm.
You don't get to be like, I lost someone, I'm sad. Everybody's lost someone. Everybody loses the most important people to them. Many people are just alone in this show.
Mm.
So speaking of that, Alicia, and she loses Ophelia, and she can't find her. But she does seem to find this woman, Elena. She does, like, sort of a Keanu Reeves and Speed move with the... The elevator. She's climbing the
what's this
cable? She's climbing the cable.
Oh wow! Milking, taking it back.
Milking. Yeah. She milking a
two
cow.
Two words. First word. Exactly.
So she meets Elena, and she finds out that, you know, Elena's been running around. She's looking for, I think it's her brother, who she eventually finds.
Yeah.
And she kind of helps her clear some of the dead, and then of course they, at the end of the episode, find Madison and Strand, who we see the aftermath of their run-in in the lobby. So I found this Elena story and the stuff with the hotel guests interesting because we had all talked about this, right?
Yeah.
How do you go forward with a wedding in an environment like this?
Yeah.
And I did think it was interesting
carefully.
How they set it up.
Very carefully.
Because the mother walks up and says, listen, there's an outbreak and it's spreading. We want to be able to get across the border. Like, as if this outbreak was dangerous, but not like... It's just, we're just going to get overrun with zombies any second.
Mm.
The reason they died, of course, was because they got locked in a room. And you wonder in how many situations around the world when this is happening, similar things are happening. There's one person that there's a breakout in a room and somebody like traps them in to get away.
But I bet there are a lot of wedding organizers around the world that, zombies or no zombies, would like to lock their clients in a room and just
right.
leave just, them
yeah,
there. Because, you know, mothers of the brides can be a right nightmare.
Bridezillas are
oh,
not
God, yeah.
Around.
Also, leave them in there with the Vullivans or whatever.
How did Oscar and the mother get away? They were locked in there, and they seemed to be like a couple of the only survivors. I'm wondering how they got out. They didn't show us that, right?
No, they didn't.
Uber?
They just showed.
Did they call an Uber?
Taxi. No, they just showed the father and the daughter being taken down. But yeah, maybe they just for, you know, luck were not in the room at that time.
Restroom break.
Right. Plot twist. Yeah, so.
Or a massive plot hole. Because, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do. I mean, that might come up as a question.
Right.
Because, you know, there have to be the discussion. And that's why, obviously, they're keen. I think that might be why they're keen to see Elena again. Mm-hmm. Is because not only did Elena lock them in the room, but Elena will go like, how you got out. Mm-hmm. So that she will know their dirty little secret, which is the fact that even though Elena locked them in there.
Yeah.
These guys were like, well, to hell with this. Yeah, I'm leaving. Yeah. I'm going to go out the window or whatever.
So let's jump from there to tonight's episode.
Yeah.
Because we actually pick up with at the end of the episode with Alicia and Elena finding Strand and Madison, and we don't know how they survive. So this starts out with Madison and Strand fighting in the bar, and Madison is just sober all of a sudden. She's just fully conscious.
Both of them. Yeah.
She was just wasted, and she just goes on a dime. She's able to just like be sensible. I don't know. I guess.
Well, you adrenaline. Say sensible, but she's smearing herself with the blood of a walker.
To survive.
Yeah, but we've all done silly things when we're drunk.
Yeah. Right? Yes, true.
True.
Yeah, we've been there. Just with it, less zombie-ish.
I don't know if smearing yourself with walker blood is the drunk move for her.
Hey, don't knock it till you tried it.
But like fear and adrenaline, dude, that does sober you up immediately. No matter. And so I was sort of waiting in the next. And I was glad that Strandman referenced to it, the tequila hangover.
Yeah.
But I was sort of like wondering. Is there going to be, like, the adrenaline wears off and they pause for a second and then she starts slurring her words? Because, you know, that works,
I'm so pissed.
The adrenaline gets you. You think you're sober and then you pause and it's an hour later and you realize that you're still pretty drunk. Like, that sort of moment.
Yeah. I have a question, though.
Yeah.
It's to go back to the zombie blood. Is now a lot of people know that that works. In order to get past all the walkers, why don't they just continually smear themselves with blood and they can walk around very freely? Because they keep washing it off and they're going, oh, shit, the walkers can see me again.
Well, it's pretty dangerous, I think, just to be around the walkers anyway. Like, we've seen if you make a sound, the wrong sound, they can still get you. Also, something I'm wondering about, and maybe somebody in the chat can help us out with this, but if you get any walker blood in your mouth, do you turn?
That's what I thought. And then if you have, like, a cut on you or something. I mean, that's what I would imagine. And then a lot of the times you see the blood so close to their mouth. Like, I can't imagine how you... Especially with Nick, you know? And you're not careful putting this stuff on. Like, it could get in your eye. It could get any part of your body. So I don't know, like... Maybe if it's once it's exposed to air, I don't know.
Yeah, because like is the disease transferred from like your teeth when they bite you? Is that where it comes from? I think this information exists and has been cleared up probably at some point. We're just like a little bit unaware of.
Right.
Help us out in the chat.
Like I love the way you say it, like there's a fact book.
Oh, there is.
Yes. It's just I mean,
in an interview, I'm sure somebody's like revealed exactly how this works.
I think from a bite. I mean, I'm no doctor. Right. But I would think that if they bite you, then it's something in the saliva rather than the teeth.
Right.
Because your teeth aren't living, effectively. They're just chunks of calcium or whatever. I'm not a scientist, like I say. Hey, Dr. Science. Thanks, Bill Nye, the useless guy. So I think it's more from saliva than it is from the teeth.
Yeah.
But don't trust me. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
So speaking of this, let's jump. We'll jump back to the Madison story here in just a second.
Sure. Okay.
But, speaking of how a bite turns you, we have a whole storyline with Nick and Alejandro. Is that
Yeah.
And he so Nick convinces Alejandro that I need to make things right. I screwed it up at the trade store with the gangsters, and I need to cut these pills for you because I'm a junkie. At this convenience skill I have, I'm going to be able to cut these drugs with like. Powdered milk or something? Is that what he's cutting it with?
Yeah, powdered milk. Went all Jimmy Neutron scientist on us in the lab.
I hope they're not lactose intolerant.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. That would be awkward.
Well, yeah. On the toilet for
hours. I know,
but they'll have
right?
the high of their life. Yeah.
So in the course of discussing this whole idea with Alejandro tells Nick the story of how he got bitten, that he claims to have been bitten and not turned, right? And then he also says that he doesn't want to lose Nick because there's this other addict and so on and so forth. So the first question is, at this point, do we think there's any chance that he actually got bitten and didn't turn?
I'm calling bullshit on that. I don't think so, because unless the thing is, if he did get bitten, and was somehow immune, he would therefore be effectively. So if you were the doctor, if you were the pharmacist, you would go, okay, take my blood.
Yep.
We know we can cure people by perhaps injecting them with my blood.
Yeah.
And then we can get rid of the undead that way, because obviously he's been talking about, you know, passing through in a second life. So I would think that that would be the way. So I'm going to think that there's something going on where he hasn't actually been bitten by a walker.
Yeah.
He might have been bitten by someone.
Something or someone.
I'm thinking maybe the kid who was high.
Right.
That he was saying that they killed. And it wasn't a walker, but suddenly he's like, oh, I can cash in on this, and I can suddenly be the leader. Yeah, because I was just the pharmacist.
Yeah.
Then I'm suddenly the guy who runs the camp, and I'm the guy in charge. I'm thinking that might be a possibility.
Alejandro seems like a prime character to die this season. He's exactly the kind of character that does die. The question is, in regular Walking Dead, we have never had an immune character. In World War Z, that's spoiler alert. That's the trick in the end, is you realize that there are people that are immune.
Yeah.
That is kind of like a common thread that shows up in zombie literature, that eventually you realize there are people that are immune and you make a vaccine from their blood.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting idea. Maybe that in this world they're introducing the idea that there actually are people that are immune. It seems unlikely, but I don't think I would rule it out. Would you?
I mean, I think it would be interesting, but I think that, like, especially with The Walking Dead, and not to talk too much about that show, just since this is a prequel to it, I just think it would take a lot away from the potential storyline.
Yeah.
You know, if there is something that can cure, I mean, this is what's driving the show, the fact that they're dealing with this world where there are all these living dead people. And so to have a vaccine, I think it would be interesting if he actually did have an immunity, but then he's killed or he dies before they have an opportunity to actually harvest his blood or make a vaccine. So it would be an interesting plot point, but I don't think it would be strong enough to hold as, you know, something that they would implement for.
Well, I think they're not shows about finding a cure. They're shows about survival. I did like, though, when you were talking about the Nick talking about the making the drugs. He said he has like a limited but refined skill set. It reminded me very much of Liam Neeson, who had a very particular set of skills.
Yeah.
It was kind of less Taken and more Taken Drugs.
Yeah right.
Mm-hmm.
But it just came to me. So.
I think so. In the series, yeah. That's the next
I'm going to find you, then I'm going to inject heroin into my penis.
So question, guys. I was talking to somebody the other day, and we'll continue moving through the episode, but I was asking what he thought about the show, because he's been a longtime fan of both the comic, the original show. He's watched all the way through this show. And he was saying that a lot of people he's talked to have had the complaint that they thought this show was going to be about the long process of the world turning. Like everything leading up to, I guess, that moment that Rick wakes up, sort of. And he was like, I think the general consensus is that you got a few episodes of that, and then people just started hiding in houses, and it turned into the same story, which is just the world's overrun by zombies, everything's fallen apart, civilization's collapsed, and there's no hope, and it's just another Walking Dead show. Do you guys feel like that is the case, and that's maybe why the show was not what people thought they were going to watch?
I thought exactly the same thing today, and I also thought that there was a lot of hoo-ha made about the crossover with the plane. And for me, that's kind of disappeared a little bit too soon.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that character is going to come back. We are going to see her again. I'm not holding out. It seems to have moved away from that, unless they do head back towards America, which is looking like perhaps they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is feeling very much, it's feeling very similar to, and we have Carol Watch on the show. We have various other things, and we compare characters in Fear the Walking Dead to The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is feeling a little bit samey. I mean, I was, you know, thinking today that Maddie is very quickly sort of, you know, becoming the Andrew Lincoln role, you know, in this, and, you know, we're seeing Strand kind of being the number two. And it is becoming like when Maddie was talking about, you know, we've got to protect the hotel because more people will come and they'll try and take it from us. I was thinking, like, this is getting very close.
It's Rick.
It's The Walking Dead. And I'm like,
yeah, well, speaking on that note, I know we kind of talked a little bit about this, about there possibly being a merge of these two shows, which would be really interesting to see. And shout out in the chat, Tiedros says that maybe the cure is what will eventually connect the two shows, one group seeking out the other because they hear of a cure. So that might be an interesting way to connect the shows, if that's the direction that they go. But ultimately, I mean, I liked how the show's starting off. And honestly, I still do like the show. But I think that it is definitely going in a different direction than people expected. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they just have to be very careful with the plays that they make, because they do have the bigger sister show that's very successful and that has made the right plays.
But also Kirkman and Co. have said that there's not going to be a crossover. That's not what they're working towards. And also the fact that, you know, in The Walking Dead, they did say that, you know, originally one of the characters, like, we're going to find a cure. You know, I know where the cure is. It's in Washington. We're going to get there.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like, there is no cure. Yeah. So I think that's a very good point, and that could very well happen. They could change their minds.
Yeah.
But the people behind the show keep insisting there's not going to be a crossover. And The Walking Dead has moved away from finding a cure. And again, that's more about survival and repopulation and strength in numbers and creating a new world, rather than going back to the one they've left. So it could happen.
Yeah.
That they could go down that route, but I don't know. And the timelines are kind of not quite right to actually match up.
They don't line up. I mean, I think when you talk about the major, without like going fully down the road of comparison, I think people talk about the show and they wonder what the direction it's taking is, why, and also why it's sort of less satisfying to some people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, one show is based largely on a storyline that already exists. Yeah. The show has taken turns, but it has source material. Yeah. You get to just sort of put in your points in the story and we'll go over here, but it's still going to get back to here because eventually we're going to get to here. And you see that with that show. With this show, it's just an open book. You can do whatever you want. And so at the end of the day, you have to create characters people like. You don't get to take them from another medium. Mm-hmm. You can't rely on the fact that you have people expecting something. There isn't anything to expect from this show.
I think the biggest change is going to come with the show. I think there's going to be a massacre due soon. We had this conversation earlier that, you know, I think they do need to clean house. I think there need to be some major cast changes. I think, you know, some major people need to die. We need to see some, you know, change of face and a change of dynamic, I think, and a change of location. We discussed this before the show. You know, they're in Mexico right now. They appear to be heading back to America. The canvas they're painting on in Mexico is quite limited.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Marco and is it Marco? Yeah. And the guys are going to, you know, turn up in an episode very soon. They can't just keep coming across, you know, bandits, you know, and that kind of thing within Mexico. They've got to kind of mix up by dynamic.
Yeah.
There's not a lot else there for them to do.
Yeah.
They've done the water. They've done the land. They've done, you know, sort of bandits. And I'm like, they need to, if they're going to step it up, they need to do that and expand it a bit more. I think perhaps we could see that with the end of this season, or perhaps season 3.
Tanya and R in the chat said, would rather they just call it The Walking Dead Mexico.
Yeah, so. It's true. No, you know when they were announcing the show,
it's great,
and a lot of the interviews were happening?
Yeah.
Kirkman on a podcast, like, he was just joking around, and he was like, yeah, I guess we'll probably just, like, do, you know, Fear the Walking Dead, and we'll do, you know, he's like, The Walking Dead LA, we'll do The Walking Dead China, we'll do The Walking Dead. It's like, and to some degree, if you think about how hard it is to make a show that's successful on television, even if the ratings on the show are plummeting, it's still significantly more successful than most shows on TV.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers are still super high compared to, like, fringe shows on CW and these, like, destination-only digital shows. So it's kind of one of those things where you're like, well, what do we expect? Does it dilute the brand if we keep something going that's not performing as well as we'd like? Or even if it's getting 20% of the views of television's most watched show, it's still 20% of television's most watched show.
Well, yeah. I'm still getting a lot out of the show. I'm still really, really enjoying it. You know, I don't want to do the show down, but I do think that it has potential that it's not quite meeting just yet. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see it do something a bit different to what we're getting on The Walking Dead.
I agree. So let's save this for Carol Watch. I'd like to do a little bit larger prediction section event here, where we talk about things that we think will happen, and also more than that, like, the big sweeping deaths. If we could, I want to do kind of a list, like, who do we think is expendable?
Yeah.
If you want to do a cleaning house sort of thing, because I agree with you. I agree with you.
Housekeeping.
So let's continue moving down the plot of this episode.
Sure.
So we had the negotiation, and Nick comes back, and then he has a moment with Luciana.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a teen romance moment, almost.
I know.
Yeah.
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah. And he's reading books with a candle, and they're speaking Spanish to each other, and he says,
"Mi amor."
Yeah, right.
He says, it's like one of those Spanish novellas.
Yeah, know? Right. And he says, "I heard you test people," and she turns around and she kisses him.
Yes.
But also that classic romantic line. I mean, it's slightly cliched. "I'm wearing clean socks."
Yeah.
I mean,
that,
what woman?
That always gets me.
What woman?
Man.
Yeah, I know, woo! Right?
Right.
I was like, clean to me.
Player?
Yeah.
It was a good line.
You haven't lost your mojo.
Yeah.
Take notes, boys. Take notes.
This is the first time in the show that we've seen Nick with a romantic moment, like going after something that he wanted.
A present. He's romantic moment.
Yeah, he's sort of had, like, he had like his drug-addled sort of his co-pilot when he was getting when he found out that his dad died.
Coke pilot.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
He had that's the same girl that he was with in the pilot who ends up dying and turning, right? Mm-hmm. Who we think is maybe patient zero. Is that possibly what we think?
Possible.
I don't know if they were suggesting that. It's the first one we saw. And then
we've had worse breakups.
Yeah. And then he has a moment with Ophelia where it kind of seems like maybe someday, but it doesn't ever go there. But this is the first time that Nick has like really just gone for it. What do you guys think?
He didn't really go for it.
Well, Pablo was her boyfriend. He didn't realize Pablo was her brother.
He was fishing.
And Pablo's in pieces.
He was fishing. They don't have Tinder in the... I mean, maybe they do. Swipe, swipe, grr.
What I took from that particular scene, it's that he's getting very comfortable, I think, with the idea of just being away from his family and being away from what's comfortable and what's comfortable to him and from what he's used to, and him kind of creating this new family, this whole new life, and like trying to settle down in that. And I mean, I think he really did love his girlfriend, the other junkie coke pilot who was with him. And so I think this is like one of the first people that he's been able to open up to, you know, because when she talks about, oh, that was your brother, not your boyfriend. I mean, he clearly likes the distinguishing between those two. It's like a family member is very important, but a person who you like you're romantically with, like that, it's a very different type of relationship.
Well, he said family knows where you come from was one of the lines when he was talking to Lucy tonight.
But to me, it just kind of made the assumption like family knows where you come from and they're important. But having that special someone in your life, too, like that is equally as important. And for him to be able to experience that again, I think it just kind of shows like, OK, he might be drifting a little bit further away from we're drifting further away from the idea of him reuniting with Madison and the rest of the group so easily and so quickly and so fast, and that he can really kind of create this whole new life, and that will create some conflict, I'm sure, for the future.
Well, I think this whole idea of reuniting has kind of gone to the back of his head. I think he's kind of found his place. But he's done this kind of, it's almost like chameleon kind of cocoony type thing, because obviously, you know, we've seen him go completely batshit. You know, cover himself with blood and go walking off. And then he's like, I'm on my own, I'm a hard ass. Then
he realizes. He's a cult, too. He kind of was buying out of cultish stuff.
And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, so he's kind of going. He's almost like a chameleon where whichever group he's associated with, he's kind of fitting an emotional and a physical role that he's kind of going, okay, here, I'm going to be the savior and the lover. That's where I'm going to be. I'm going to go out and I'm going to be the big man and get stuff and come stuff. And Alejandro made a comment today about, I'm worried about you. You know, be brave, but be careful. And he's like, you're like my mum. And he's like, I'm not trying to be your mum. You know, I'm different. And I think he's kind of, whichever situation he's in, he is very much amending his behavior rather than authentically changing his thoughts and his minds and where it's coming from. He's just kind of changing shape.
Right.
Yeah. Whichever way it goes.
Do we see a love triangle between Luciana, Nick, and Ophelia?
Oh, I don't think so. Yeah. That seems like a stretch. I'm trying to imagine a world where that reunion we keep talking about is even possible. Yeah. Honestly, I don't know how you merge these three groups again without there. It doesn't seem like the pieces fit anymore. Yeah. People seem like they're all going in such drastically different directions. It kind of feels like Travis dies. Chris goes out on his own and maybe swings back into the story at some point. Nick maybe reunites with the group after a couple people have been cleared out.
Yeah.
But I don't think the idea of these worlds joining is very likely to me. Then again, we will see what happens with the show. Let's continue moving through the storyline of the episode, though. So moving back to the hotel, we have a whole plan that is hatched where after these characters separate, Strand and Madison, they appeal to... Oscar? Oscar, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And they get inside to talk to Oscar... who is, I think, the
Grouch.
Yeah, he's the former husband of Jessica, who's now a zombie, and also her mother.
Yeah.
And Madison kind of takes the negotiation point of view that you mentioned, you know?
Yeah.
We don't secure this place and clear it. People will come. They will be cruel. We will all die.
Yeah.
So they kind of agree. They make this arrangement to clear the place, and then Alicia figures out that you can use the Riptide to get rid of the zombies, so they hatch a plan.
Yeah.
With Madison in that room, it's really interesting because she's already, before they go in there, the situation that Maddie and Strand are, they're having the conversation. It seems very much like Strand is going along the kind of the A-B route, whether it's like this happens or this happens. It's one of the two. There's not in between. Maddie appears to be very much now being very practical and very reality-based. Her statements are very much, this is happening, we're doing this, you can be part of it or not, but it's going to happen anyway. She's very much taking that that kind of leadership position of anybody that's around, rather than going, well, let's have a conversation. She's like, this is going to be the solution. This is where we're going to get to. Be part of it. Don't be part of it, but it's happening.
And to take it even a step further, her referencing that this can be a home for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, Strand having issue with that. And so, you know, being rational, being practical, and kind of accepting the fact, like, this might be it for us. This it just might be us, and we'll do the very best that we can to guard this place, and this is going to be home, and we're going to be each other's family. And so I think that, you know, the whole plan, it coming together, it was a great plan for them to do. But, yeah, same, I struggled with Strand, too, as well. Like, no, we can't really call it a home. Like, maybe that's just... Yeah. A choice of words. I would have done something differently, but it's the idea of them now having this place and calling it a home, a house. I don't know.
For me, when he was talking about, you know, the fact he doesn't see it as home, he had a home.
Yeah.
I think to me, it's almost it could potentially be with his character the beginning of the end, where he's starting to let go of the fact that the only certain thing that he knew and he had that was an anchor has gone. Thomas has gone. That community has gone. And now everything else is just happening. It's just a thing. You're wherever you are. That's kind of where you're at the moment. Nothing is permanent. Nothing is your anchor.
Right.
So I think it's a dangerous position for him to be in, because it's one or the other. You know, he was talking about the fact that he just thought the girls had gone. They're out of the picture. They're not happening. So they decided not to be here. They saved themselves. That's what they did. Everybody saves themselves. That everybody leaves, blah, blah, blah. And I think he's starting to get in that mental mindset where it's like, we're going to die.
Yeah.
It's just a case of when. And I think it's a dangerous position. He could cause himself potential risk and for the group.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that scene with Madison and Strand walking down the hallway, that was my favorite scene in the episode.
Yeah.
I liked everything about it. The framing of it, the music, the conversation, the sort of level of matter of fact that Madison and their interaction is extremely satisfying on this show. Like, it's becoming better and better. And their scenes together on the episodes, like you said, it sort of feels like it's becoming the 1A and the 1B.
Could they kind of get together?
Maybe.
Have a little...
Right? I think that would actually be a really cool angle to take, because they suggested to us this idea that Strand was gay. But they've also sort of dangled the idea that Strand is somebody who just... He kind of just shifts to whatever side of the line benefits him the most.
Sexual chameleon.
Yeah, and he said, I would have hit on you. And he even gives her the line earlier when he's talking about the rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, there's a couple's suite upstairs or something like that.
Isn't
that right? Couple's room upstairs. We're better together.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I would love that, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that would be a great angle for the show to take.
It'd be a very interesting turn of events. But I think that would make sense, especially because the relationship starting off was very rocky, and they seem like two opposite people.
Travis comes back. It creates all kinds of weirdness.
Yeah. What are you doing? Just took my pants off. Getting some back relief.
I slipped and fell and my
had sex with a lady.
Yeah, right.
It happens.
It happens, man. What happens in Mexico?
Yeah, there you go.
Have you not having sex with a stranger? You're being killed by walkers.
So, so anyway, that scene was really great. They hatched this plan to draw the zombies in the riptide.
Yeah.
Here's something I kept thinking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They want to build the suspense, right? Mm-hmm. So Madison's walking down that walkway, and she's about 15 feet in front of the walkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of just like, Madison, can't you just run like 50 feet further? Because they're still going to follow you. Yeah. They're not going to lose sight of you. You're the only thing in front of them. And if you trip while you're walking backwards right now, you might just die.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, this is a tension-building moment, but it's also not a sensible moment. I thought the same thing about... I thought the same thing about when Strand and Elena were opening the doors in the in the hotel. Like, there has to be a way to rig this where, like, you open the door a little bit, but it's not open all the way. Yeah. So they have to kind of slowly get out and follow you. Like, it just seems like these people put themselves in horribly dangerous situations.
I thought that hotel etiquette was terrible, because everybody knows that before we go into a hotel and we go... Room service.
Yeah.
Somebody could have been looking at zombie porn. They could have been having a poo. Could have been doing anything. But I mean, one thing that I thought was genius about when they were clearing the rooms was the music that they used remind me so much of John Carpenter's movies.
Oh.
And it was just that the music. Thing. I was like, yeah, things like The Thing and They Live and, you know, a lot of the John Carpenter movies, they've all had that very similar kind of music. And I was like, that was a stroke of... A lot of the zombie movies, George A. Romero and stuff like that, just they all have that kind of, you know, tinkling sub-electronic score. I loved it.
Well, my biggest question was...
Where did they get all the spoons from?
Forks, yeah.
Yeah.
And where can I get one? Because
they were pretty, for a hotel cutlery, right. They were pretty sturdy.
They're large forks. Yeah. I mean, large spoons, I mean.
It's extremely large.
Huge.
But my question was, okay, can't they eventually float back to shore? Because there have been walkers in the water before, and they don't drown, right? So
I think the idea is that if you're going to, if most of your world is going to be inside this hotel, you're going to barricade the doors. And they do float back to shore. They would have to then wander up the beach, up to the doors, in a pack to get in.
So it wasn't a plan to, like, kill them all immediately.
No, just to get rid of them. Wash them out to sea is probably the most efficient way to get rid of most of them anyway.
I did wonder, though, and, you know, similar line, there was a bit just behind Maddie where it was like, don't enter. Yeah. It's really dangerous. Why not get them all through there, lock them off, and then, like, block that off? So they're all down the end of the pier. And then they won't be in the water. And then she can just jump off the pier and then...
Well, she would have to get...
In there.
And yeah. And I guess they would all have to go through the door. And then they would all have to go through the door once she's gone.
Mm.
And I think that's the idea with being so close in front of them is you want all of them to be going towards that one point. You don't want to get too far ahead, so the ones in the back sort of veer off, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, anyway.
I thought, at one point, I did think she was going to go batshit crazy and just charge all the zombies and run back.
Yeah.
All the walkers run back towards the hotel. She kind of had a look on her face like Braveheart.
Like you're saying, here, zombie.
Yeah.
Here, come on.
Right. Good zombie.
So let's talk a little bit about the final scene. They all set up for this dinner after they've cleared the Riptide zombies.
Yeah.
And there's like a big dinner and they've got candles. And it's one of these scenes that like, I feel like we see these scenes pop up sometimes and it makes me wonder sometimes if I was in this sort of situation in a zombie apocalypse, would I set the table and light candles and clean silverware and clean, you know, tablecloths? Like, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of pageantry to try to remind yourselves that you're still in the real world.
Yeah, but also, you know, treat yourself, as they say on Parks and Recs. I mean, if you think that you have a bit of breathing room, that you think you've got rid of all the zombies, there's probably not more walkers coming very, very close. And you're thinking, well, why not? If we're all going to be together, if we're going to build bridges, if we're going to smoke the peace pipe, effectively, let's all get together, let's have some wine, let's have some chill time, you know, let's have some food. They already said they've got loads of food and they've been kind of separate. So they've all been kind of, you know, having half-assed supplies here and there. Get together, have some wine, have some good times, you know, buy yourself a night where you're not under threat. And then get on with the practicality the next day. I also love food and wine.
Me too.
I also love food and wine.
But I think
and I think that Madison was probably behind them doing that. I think it was just a way for them to sort of establish some common ground. Because, you know, there's still a little bit of tension there. Like, they don't fully trust each other just because they're strangers. So I think it was just kind of a way for them to really break the ice and just get more comfortable with each other because they're going to be there for who knows how long, you know? So it probably more so than anything else. It was celebrating them getting the hotel clean, so to speak. But it was also a way for them to just get a little bit more comfortable, get to know each other a little bit better.
Well, there's a massage room. There's a couple's room. We know that already.
A couple's suite, you know?
So then Strand leaves the table because he goes to find Oscar. Yeah. And he finds him upstairs. And Oscar's really struggling to kill Jessica, who's his... Well, to get rid of Jessica, who is apparently the last walker in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, talking about if there was Tinder in this world, I think it would just be called Walker.
Walker? Right?
Because you're walking? Yeah, it's Walker. All right, anyway. So he convinces him to... And there was, I thought, some really, really nice dialogue in this scene.
Yeah,
I thought
it was
some
great.
Of the things Strand said...
it's my favorite scene of the...
Yeah. Eventually, you'll turn into someone you don't know yet. Mm. Someone new.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I thought, I liked the way he described all of it. Strand's arc and his transformation in this episode was really beautiful.
He gets the best... Either it's just his delivery or he gets the best dialogue in this series.
Yeah, I think it's a combination.
Which makes me wonder if they're going to kill him off.
No, I just think at this point, I mean, like, they elevated him from a guest star to recurring.
Yeah.
I mean, when 2 was launched, because I think they realized how good of a character that he was.
Mm.
Also, like, let's be honest here. Like, you talk about what each of these people are doing and the best characters.
Yeah.
I mean, Cliff and Kim have been on television and films for years. Cliff especially has been in tons of things.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, otherwise, Alicia's a relatively newcomer, pretty much a newcomer. Frank Delane's kind of a newcomer.
Yeah.
A lot of Ophelia, she's a newcomer. Yep. I mean, Ruben obviously is gone now.
Yep.
But,
or has he?
Yeah, well, I think he's gone.
Yeah, he's
gone. But when you talk about Strand, I mean, this guy in the last few years was in 12 Years a Slave, Selma. He was in The Butler. Like, he's in enormous Oscar-winning, Oscar-nominated movies. He's about to be in Birth of a Nation. Like, this guy's an enormously successful actor recently.
So he's kind of busy, so he could be killed off because he's got loads of work to do.
I just think the way that they're pushing the narrative now, he's a really strong character. I think, like you guys have been saying, Madison and Strand definitely on the top list of people who kind of have to stay to keep this show driving. But just with that scene, I really liked it because, you know, with Strand, I was expecting there to be a little bit of conniving, a little bit of him, you know, like what doing what he does best, trying to play the situation to his advantage and, you know, play people a little bit. But with this guy, he actually had real moments, and it wasn't about like trying to pull one over on him or trying to finesse him in any way. It was just about him being real and open and honest in a way that I don't think we've really seen him.
Well, when he says, "Let me help Jessica."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he is a carer. We've seen that he's got that almost like a, you know, a bedfellow, you know, and a kind of a nursemaid kind of thing. He did it with his husband, and now he's doing it with this guy to help.
Solid bedside manner.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously you end up dead.
Right.
So you wouldn't want him looking after you. Tends to end badly. But yeah, I mean, I think he kind of relishes this role, and it's a side of him that he doesn't get to share with many people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think his strength comes from his sort of his subtlety, his weakness, as you might see it.
So, guys, that covers most of what we're going to talk about this week, I think. Is there anything else you guys wanted to throw in before we get into a slightly longer predictions and where we think the show in general is going?
Yeah, I want to just talk about the mother-in-law.
Okay.
I think she's kind of a loose cannon.
She's crazy a little bit, yeah.
I think she is either going to try and kill Madison, or I think she's... I could see her very easily. I think it would be a bit too simple to see her try and kill Elena.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's got a grudge to bear there. I think she will see Maddie as kind of the thing that's stopping her kill Elena and stopping her controlling the group. Because obviously she had the control of half the group. Now she's lost it. Maddie's, you know, even one of the characters said they're following you.
Yeah.
Right.
It was Alicia.
Yeah.
Said they're following you. I think she's going to be a bit offended by that. And I think she's going to try and kill Maddie. So I think she's a loose cannon.
I think she's a bit.
I mean, it strikes me that way. The way that she was reacting, talking about losing her daughter and crying and whatnot.
And she had that kind of face on when she was looking over, and I'm like,
she'd be an easy loose cannon.
She looks a little bit
crazy. She'd be an easy catalyst for bad things to happen, who would then get eaten by a walker. I mean, those are all things. They all add up.
Hey, we love that.
Yeah.
So are we jumping into?
Let's do predictions.
That was a cue.
Look at that.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
So, guys, we are going to get into a couple things here. We're going to revisit Carol Watch, which is something we've been doing since the beginning of the show, which is the character on the show that we think is most likely to go from sort of a docile, not expecting too much from that character, just a stone cold badass. We predict each week who we think the person is going to
be. We do wager. I've lost a lot of money.
Well, so, it doesn't go into my bank account.
I live in a box now.
So I'd say let's start off with Carol Watch. I'm just going to throw mine out there. It's easily Alicia. She's more... Ophelia's not even in the episode, and I feel like Alicia just more and more and more is just becoming that character. She's getting stronger.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, there was a moment today where she was talking to Madison, and she said... Madison was saying, Alicia said to Madison, "You didn't do anything wrong." Yeah. And I think she was not just talking about herself. I think she was talking about Nick.
Yep.
She's not had to stand on her own 2 feet. So I think we are going to see some development, which, again, I think then leads to one of the major characters being killed.
Yeah.
Because I think she's going to have to fill that position as a leadership role.
Well, some people were in the chat were saying that they think that Madison might die only because that would propel Alicia's character to Carol Watch, which she is my choice for Carol Watch this week.
Oh,
and
cool,
there's so much mention of, you know, you're right, you did raise yourself, you did it by yourself. And
she says she's self-reliant.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, I made it that way.
I made it that way.
Yeah.
So it would be an interesting turn of events if Madison actually is killed and or dies, and it turns that's the catalyst that starts Alicia down this road to.
If this show turned into Alicia having to fill the role that Madison plays now and actually just being like this teenager who's just a stone cold savage and just like actually takes the reins, I think that'd be an incredibly interesting turn. I don't know how believable it would necessarily be long term because she's like a 16 or 17 year old girl. And that's a little bit of a tough sell in a world of just brute force. On the other hand, I think it would be an awesome direction. I think it would be super cool to take.
And no other show's doing that, really.
Yeah, that would be crazy. So let's talk about some general predictions. We can say episode specific or just where the show is going. And I would say I'll start it out with just the idea that I think that we've spent a bit too much time in Mexico this season.
Yep.
And though they have renewed the show for season 3, I know the viewership's been down a bit. And I kind of feel like we need to get back to America. We need to, as you said, clean house a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as immediate predictions go, Nick's going to relapse. I think it's way, way, way too far-fetched to think that he's been working closely with Oxy and he's just not going to keep some pills for himself. That seems crazy to me. Mm. Those are the two.
Or at the very least, I think his whole stunt is it's going to be foiled and they're going to realize that what they're doing is, you know, fake, essentially. And so that's going to cause even more issues. I think that Ophelia is going to be coming back soon. I think when people said that episode 10, she'll be back. So we'll see how that all plays out and sort of the reason why she left. And then overall predictions for the rest of the season, I think either Chris or Travis are going to be gone.
Okay, here is a couple of things. I think Pablo, we heard that Pablo's dead in pieces. I don't think he's in pieces because of the Walkers. I think he's in pieces because of Marco's people.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think there's something going on there. I think we're going to see some sort of semblance and crossover between, obviously, you know, the Marco's guys are going to attack in some way. There's going to be some sort of conflict next week. I see what we're going to see with Alejandro is that we're going to find out that he's not sweetness and light, that there was something going on with, you know, the bite.
Yeah.
Like I think like I said earlier in the episode, I think we're going to see the fact that he wasn't bitten by a walker, he was bitten by the guy. He's kind of a little bit, you know, playing everybody there.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to start to see some, we're going to start working towards seeing some major people killed off.
I think four because episodes left or three?
We have it's a double episode on October the 2nd, so okay. We've got two next week and the week after are 1 hours, and then the week after is two episodes, so it's a 2 hour finale. Season finale.
Yeah.
Crazy,
which is weird, and just before my birthday, by the way.
All right,
happy early birthday!
Thank you. I'll be 174.
You don't look a day past 106.
Thank you.
We'll pour one out for you.
But yeah, so I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah, don't spill your drink. I think that's what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks. I think it's going to get quite hard and fast very quickly.
You think the final three episodes are going to be just like intense, full of brutality, death, all kinds of things?
Yeah, and a few surprises. And I think, like I say, the mother-in-law is going to go cray.
We have to get back.
Cray.
Right. I have a hard time believing they would end the season and start season 3 in Mexico. That seems crazy. So we need to have a plot twist that gets us out of Mexico and gets at least enough of our characters and story back to America without seeming abrupt. And in just a few episodes, that seems difficult to do. Yeah.
They're going
to
get San Diego and it's going to be Comic-Con weekend.
Oh.
Comic-Con. Good luck finding a hotel room.
Right. Comic-Con, y'all.
Yeah. Oh, I got me a reek. Try the veal.
All right, guys. I think that pretty much wraps us up, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in and watching the episode with us. We apologize for missing last week, and we hope we covered enough of last week's episode during this one. If you guys have any questions, of course, you can get at any of us personally. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Follow along and let me know your thoughts, guys.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Ashley_Chapman, and thank you all for the chat. You guys were amazing tonight.
I'm on Instagram and Twitter, @ShowbizSimon, and I tend to interact on the YouTube channel, so feel free to interact. Feel free to get in touch with us there as well. Oh, and like and subscribe and tell your friends.
Yes.
Isn't that right, Ben?
100%. Thanks, Simon.
Nailed it.
All right.
We will see you guys next week. Take care.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.